Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Ed Cox, chairman of the New York State Republican Party. Welcome back, Ed. Always a pleasure to host you here.
Always good to be with you, Alan.
Okay, so here's a piece of really sad news. The first black woman appointed to New York's highest court
was
found dead on the banks of the Hudson River.
Yeah.
65-year-old Sheila Abdesalam's body was found with no obvious signs of trauma. A day after she was reported missing, Democratic Governor Andrew Cuomo appointed Abdesalam to the State Court of Appeals in 2013, calls her a trailblazing jurist. This is terrible stuff, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Judge Salam, they were of immense integrity. You know, for 19 years, I was on the Merit Selection Commission that gave the governor the seven well-qualified people from which he would select the person who would be on the highest court in New York State that she was on. And my grandfather sat on that court, actually, in the 30s and 40s. It is the preeminent common law court in the nation, if not in the world. Always has been, and that was the goal of the Merit Selection Commission, and she was one of the very fine choices that that went on to the Court of Appeals of New York State.
Do you remember any of the discussion when about how you chose her?
No. By that time, as soon as I became the chairman of the state party, I had to resign from the state parks council on, from the state university construction fund, from the state university board, and also from the Merit Selection Commission. And she was actually considered after. But I, of course, followed it closely through my friends and was aware of her and what a fine choice she was.
I should probably announce at this point, because you are in so many committees and commissions, that I do have a conflict of interest here, which could make people perceive me as being in debt to you. I remember my son calling me. He was applying for the head of the Charter School Institute in Albany, and he said, these two guys are going to interview me.
Oh, now, come on. Alan, actually, I'm in debt to you for bringing out such a fine son who was willing to take on a tough job. And he was one of the executive directors of the Charter School Institute that really made it into, I think, the finest authorizer of charter schools in the nation.
But what I was going to tell you was, so he said, I said, what are the two names? He named the other guy, and he said, and Ed Cox. And I said, the chairman of the Republican Party? He said, yes. I said, well, spread your legs and kiss your behind goodbye. You're not getting a job.
Look, I always believe in selection, and you're saying he's carrying it forward now with what he's doing.
He is in New Orleans.
School choice thing. Now, look, it is actually one of the finest, if not the finest, because of the great succession of executive directors that we had, including your son. And the reason, you got to be very tough.
You do.
I just recently participated in, because I'm on the board of the Committee for Economic Development, which is a sort of a CEO's kind of thing in Washington that develops good policy. And discussing with a Harvard professor of school choice programs and things, I made the point, he agreed, you got to be very tough with your charters. If they do not live up to what they are, you have to terminate them.
And he did.
And if they don't have good DNA, and that's a lesson for city schools here in New York City. The problem with Mayor de Blasio is that he created this renewal schools thing where piles of consultants get paid a lot and everyone's trying to improve a school that can't be improved. Bloomberg was getting to understand that you have to terminate a bad school that's not working and reconstitute it with a new start. Now, half of the charters in New York State, in the end, at least as we were getting started, well, maybe a little bit more than half, but at the first cut, it'd be about a third, a little bit more than a third, and then a few after that. And by 7 years, only 50% of the originally authorized charters were still operating. The others just didn't work out. That's the way, and The bottom line is you end up with very good schools that set examples for the way schools should be run. Each one of them different with their different themes or the different way they do, but with dedicated teachers that have good DNA, and they go on and they show the example. This is what good schools are. This is what you have to do with public schools.
Well, let's stay on
New York City.
Ed Cox, let's stay on that for a little bit. The big ugly, the new budget has come out. The charter school people are saying that they were basically hurt. They asked for more. They didn't get it. What do you think?
They were betrayed. The same thing that that Andrew Cuomo did with respect to the education tax credit. It's all political. In his re-election year in 2014, boy, he backed charter schools all the way. He was all for Eva Moskowitz, one, to poke a finger in Bill de Blasio's eye because he wanted to eliminate a potential rival from the progressive left. And he also put a lot of the school choice money is conservative Republican money that is trying to do the right thing for inner city kids. And he knew this would put him on ice, and a lot of them contributed to him thinking it was great. But then he turned around and pushed the education tax credit over the side. And the teachers' union really cared about the education tax credit. That was a new program that would have really beefed up our parochial schools and our yeshivas and would have done a lot for them. Those were the original charter schools. But now that you have these free charter schools, they are hurting the parochial schools. You need to build them up. It made a lot of sense for it. Half of the Democrats in the assembly had signed on to the bill. All it needed was Andrew Cuomo's support. He had pledged it to the Cardinal, and he turned around and sunk that bill in order to be in good with the teachers while he was going the other way, as far as teachers' unions concerned, with respect to charter schools. He gave a dollop of money to keep the Catholic schools and the yeshivas happy. He gave them a couple hundred million that was owed to them in any case for things that they had done to the city, owed them for, but the city hadn't paid up, or the state hadn't paid up. They did pay up, but that was a one-time a bit of money, and on an ongoing basis, the education tax credit was dead. He's doing the same here with charter schools, and this is a little bit complicated, I understand that, but he's given a one-shot to them, I think it's about $50 million, but on an ongoing basis, they are going to be getting a lot less than the other public schools. And yet they are performing a lot better. And
some aren't, right? As you mentioned before, some don't make the mark.
That's right. And those that don't make it, no matter how good the authorization process is, and they're put through a very rigorous process, some just don't make it. And you have to be willing to close it down. Bill de Blasio has not been willing to close down failing schools. He keeps them going. And the result has been a huge scandal about renewal schools, where you have the principals trying to look good by graduating students who shouldn't be graduated, according to the teachers in the school. And the scandal, people being paid for things they're not doing. And when you keep a school that's failing that way, you're going to get that kind of corruption.
What about all those people who sit on regular school boards around the state who are saying that when you give charter schools more money by law out of the one pot of money you have, that takes money away from the public school, the other public schools, as you just put it?
In the 10 years that I was a chairman of the Charter School Institute of the State University of New York, the school district superintendents would come in and cry, and I would say, look, it's very simple. These schools are better. They have lotteries, and seven times the number of students they can take are lined up wanting to get into these schools. You could save money by attriting your bureaucracy, attriting some of your teachers just naturally. You don't have to pay them, and because charter schools cost less than your public schools, you actually can have more money for your public schools. As a result of that, you just have to have the guts to do what any business does when it's failing, and that is to reduce your overhead. And you can do that. And you can do it very easily by just letting teachers and your bureaucracy naturally attrit. And you don't need as much of them because now you have the charter schools doing the work for you. And they look at me with blank faces saying, because they have no answer to that.
Well, no, the blank face simply means we hate you, doesn't it?
I mean, it's just pure logic that the business world knows very well. When you have a failing company, you have to redo it. And for those,
like Sears or something else, Ed, they don't redo it. I mean, you know, some of them are forced out of business. So let's not.
Sure, no, that's right. Yeah, no, yeah. Companies that don't, they go out of business, and schools that are not up to snuff should go out of business and get reconstituted so that they do their job of teaching the children of the state of New York the way they should be in this great state, which is known, has been known in the past for its educational institutions.
Ed Cox, let's stay on education for a while. In the Big Ugly, the budget, comes the so-called free college tuition for those making, I think, under 125. I heard 100 the other day, but I'm assuming it's $125,000 a year. And now it turns out that the state Senate, I think your party, controlled by your party, the Republicans, made some insistences on how to make that a little bit better, including that you had to stay in the state for at least 4 years if you went to a four-year college. What do you make of that?
Look, Alan, Andrew Cuomo's a fraud on these things. All he cares about is a soundbite. Free tuition, tax-free New York, ads, crime, tax-free New York. Let me tell you, New York is not tax-free, and this program is not tuition-free the way it works, only for a very small select number of students that the others have to pay for through their taxes in the end. Look, New York is neither tax-free. This is not tuition-free, but we are going to be Cuomo-free after November 2018.
Oh, yeah, who you got? I ask you this every time I see you. And you go, I got a guy with a radio show. I got a guy. I mean, you have anybody run against him?
Oh, sure.
They will
be lining up. Of course, you recall that the Senate Majority Leader, John Flanagan, there was an article, and he denied. In fact, he said he was interested in being the governor of this great state. We've got Harry Wilson.
Wait.
Let me finish with the list here. We got Harry Wilson, who ran a great race for controller in 2010, almost won. If he'd gotten about 3% more of the vote here in New York City, he would have won. He's very interested in running. And then you've got Rob Astorino, who's now running for a third term, the county exec of Westchester County, ran a great race last time, but he's outspent at 20-1, 10-1 in actual funds that Cuomo raised, and another $53 million for his tax-free New York ads, which made it feel-good ads that, in fact, crescendoed by his own people, saying before a Democratic Assembly committee that they peaked around re-election time for Cuomo in 2014. So, look, come November 18, we're going to have some great candidates who are looking to defeat Andrew Cuomo, and any one of them will be able to do it.
If any one of those guys you mentioned beats Andrew Cuomo, I'm going to meet you in Macy's window.
By the way, Ed, you were right. Dutchess County, from up your way, Marcus Molinaro, he's the county exec.
Oh, I like him.
Great job in Dutchess County. So we'll have to sort that out. We'll see when it comes down to it who our candidate will be, but we will sort it out. We're going to have a great candidate who will defeat Cuomo in November 18 because he's been defrauding the state for too long.
Let me ask you a question. If you could give one—now take this seriously, all right? If you could give one piece of advice to your president, Donald Trump, what would it be?
Having lived in the White House for several years with a president of the United States, you give advice only when asked. And your job as part of a presidential family is to make sure that on the family side, he does the best job he can. He's ready to do the best job he can do as president of the United States.
Well, but wait a second now. Ivanka Trump apparently was the one who told him to bomb Syria. So somebody in the family said something.
Well, if he's asked for advice, I'm sure they'll give it to him. But
well, if he said to you,
wait a second. Let's make this clear. H.R. McMaster is a superb person to run the National Security Council. General Mattis is a superb person to be the be the Secretary of Defense. And you've got in Tillerson a superb Secretary of State. They all weighed in the councils on doing this. Now, I have no doubt that the family on the personal side, when asked, gave advice too, but these are really substantial people who know what they need to do in their jobs, and I'm sure that that their advice was the advice that the president followed.
Well, Counselor, you opened the door, so I'm going to ask you a question because I want a follow-up of my very good original question, if I do say so. Did your father-in-law, the president of the United States, Richard Nixon, did he ever say to you, Ed, you got any advice for me? Did he ever say that to you? You said if asked.
Over dinner, yeah, at Camp David, I remember we had some discussions about things. What do you think? What do you think? What do you think? Around the table. And, yeah, and actually he went to the telephone and actually told Bob Hanna, we're going to do this. So, yeah, sometimes the family does wait. But then it went through a whole staff process, and actually it turned out a lot different than we had been talking.
Did he ever? So did he have to approve?
That's the way the presidency works.
When you married Tricia, right?
1971 in the Rose Garden of the White House. That's right.
Right. When you married her, did he have to approve that marriage? Did he have to go to him and say, I want to marry your daughter?
Of course.
You did?
Of course.
What
yes.
did he say to you? Did he ask for your bona fides and all like that?
We started dating in high school. We've been dating for 7 years by the time I asked him for Tricia's hand. So we knew each other very, very well, and it was very easy for me to do.
Okay, I want to try one more time, and then I'm going to give it up. Okay, ready? Here we go. If Donald Trump said to you, Ed Cox, Ed, do you have any advice for me? What would you say?
Actually, he did do that.
Okay, so, now I see we're getting somewhere.
And this is when he was the presumptive nominee, the President of the United States. The next morning, we were there, and it was a little bit sooner than he had thought, the way it worked out. The chair of Pennsylvania was with me, and we went through that, and he listened. How are we going to do this with the party? How are we going to relate to this and that? And he started making decisions, and I got to say, he made some very good decisions based on advice.
Well, what kind of advice?
That's private. But I got to say, I saw then a person who was ready to become president of the United States, and I'd seen, obviously, at close up, a person be president of the United States, a person who, incidentally, he admired, my father-in-law. And I saw...
Well, he may have said that to you, but we don't know if he...
Who could make decisions the way a president should make decisions.
Well, maybe he said that, but we don't know if it's true, because he tells a lot of, you know, he reverses himself a lot, doesn't he?
Well, you know, consistency is the hobgoblin the little minds once said. And if you are dealing with great issues, you better damn well be ready, based on evidence, to reverse yourself rather than sticking some ideological line that just doesn't fit the realities of the situation. We are in a tough, real world now. Not an ideological world like the Cold War, but where each country, it has to be treated separately, separate interests, separate kind of leadership, separate internal political considerations, separate military capabilities, separate economics, and all those things have to be taken into account, and they're very factual. You need a pragmatic president who will take each situation differently, put it in the whole, take advice from the best people you can take advice from, and make a decision and move ahead.
Well, what about this guy Bannon? You know, ideologue, it seems to be on the downward slope right now, while Jared Kushner and Ivanka are in the
Who's up, who's down.
Well,
the media loves to play the game. But let me tell you, Steve Bannon represents working men and women of this country who elected Donald Trump.
I work. And, he doesn't represent me.
That is a voice that needs to be heard. That's why he made him a strategic counselor, someone who will keep. Now, sometimes the president's got to make decisions that don't necessarily fit with the people who elected him, because he represents all the people of this country. But that voice needs to be heard, and that's what Steve Bannon represents.
Okay, and if he gets kicked out of the White House by Trump and Kushner...
You're dealing in hypotheticals now.
And, all right.
It's a wonderful media game, but I'm not going to play it.
Fair enough. But here's another one, another hypothetical. Donald Trump Jr. says he will not run for governor. Were you in on all of that?
Oh, well, I was asked my opinion. Look, this is I have watched him perform at the convention, another place of... He is a very capable individual who I think would succeed at whatever he does, including politics. But at the moment, he and Eric are running running the family business. They got their hands full with that, and a lot of things you have to deal with and make sure you do it right. Avoid conflicts. It makes it much harder to do business when your father is president of the United States. And so, I found the same thing when I was practicing law. You have to be sure you avoid conflicts so that you don't put yourself in situations before a judge who might be looking to be promoted to a higher court by the president of the United States. Look, they've got a very complicated but successful business that they have to run under the circumstances. And so I think he made the right decision there.
Let's talk about the proposed constitutional amendment, constitutional convention. The voters in New York State have to vote up or down. You're recommending?
You open up the Constitution at this point where the special interests under Andrew Cuomo are running this state off the rails. I don't care how you structure it. They're going to get in there. And all the special interest legislation, they may have gotten passed but may not be permanent, or special legislation that they couldn't get passed, they'll want to put it in the Constitution of the state, so it'll be much harder to change it. At this point in time, a constitutional convention would be a huge mistake. It'd be a gift to the special interests that are running this state under Andrew Cuomo.
My colleague at the New Pulse, who is a very respected political scientist, Gerald Benjamin, I know you know him or talk to him.
I love him. He's
a Republican.
Guru. He's
for it.
A Republican or Democrat, I got to tell you, whatever he is, he's a great professor of the institutions and the politics of New York State, and admire him a lot for that. By the way, he also has a daughter who is pretty successful at what she does with respect to state politics.
She is. I was at a wedding. Okay, yeah. So let's talk a little bit about Schneiderman. We only have a minute to go, but he's really been on the attack after Trump on environment, immigration.
Let me tell you, he is on the retreat now just for his own personal ideological and political purposes. He went after ExxonMobil and said, oh, they are defrauding their stockholders by not talking about climate change, and they've been lying, and turns out they haven't been. And he got a whole posse of attorney generals from around the country to follow, and they are all dropping off one by one, and he's left alone, and now he's on the defensive. They're going after his emails. Did you do this for a political reason? And he's refusing on the attorney general who's supposed to enforce the law, and he should disclose these things to show he's done it cleanly, and he's covering up. The attorney general is covering up his political sins.
I always thought he was a gutsy guy, going where other people didn't dare to go. There's a question.
Well, he should have. Look, Attorney General's got to follow the facts. He didn't follow the facts. He followed his ideological and political leanings here. The wrong thing for an Attorney General to do.
Isn't that predictable that you would say that, Ed Cox, chairman of the Republican State Committee? Of course, that's what you do, isn't it?
We tell truth to power.
It's always great to talk to my pal, Ed Cox. I will get mail saying, what do you mean, your pal? Yeah, we've been friends for a long time. And I really thank you, Ed, for coming on and giving your side of the story. It's great to talk to you.
Enjoy fencing with you always, Alan.
It's great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.